Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a concept that is so fundamental to, well, to modern life, we almost never even think to question it.
Objectivity.
Exactly. We rely on it for everything, right? From, you know, scientific discoveries to journalism, even court testimony. We just assume it's the natural, timeless standard for truth.
And that very assumption is what we're here to really pull apart today. We're going to be doing a deep dive into Stephen Gaukroger's amazing and frankly mind-bending work, objectivity.
And his big argument is that this ideal of detached, neutral, value-free investigation, it's not timeless at all.
No. He argues it's a specific and actually pretty recent historical invention.
And this is where it gets really interesting for you listening at home. Because if objectivity was invented, if it was a choice that was made in a specific cultural moment back in the 17th century, then, I mean, understanding its origins is just crucial for navigating the world we live in now.
It matters so much today. We're living in this, you know, profound crisis of trust. People are questioning sources of knowledge, and we all struggle with that messy, persistent split between facts and values.
Right.
Gaukroger's history gives us the roadmap. It shows us the limitations and, maybe more importantly, the moral demands that were built right into our definition of seeking truth. So to really appreciate the argument, let's talk about the author himself, Stephen Gaukroger. He's this eminent historian of philosophy and science.
He spent, what, 4 decades working on the scientific revolution?
At least. He's an emeritus professor at the University of Sydney. And what makes him so perfect for this is his background.
He's not just a philosopher.
No, and that's the key. He's trained in philosophy, but he approaches this whole subject like an intellectual archaeologist. He doesn't just sit back and analyze the concept of objectivity abstractly,
yeah.
You know, asking, is this idea coherent?
He gets his hands dirty, so to speak.
He really does. He excavates, he digs down into the historical, the cultural, the political anxieties that literally forced objectivity into existence.
So he shows that these ideas we treat as purely intellectual, like the matter of fact.
Right. We're actually desperate solutions to urgent real world problems.
So objectivity wasn't some neat intellectual leap forward. It was a response to pure chaos. We're talking about the religious wars tearing Europe apart, this deep philosophical skepticism undermining all authority.
Exactly. Gaukroger's big insight is that objectivity at its birth was an attempt to save society from tearing itself apart by finding a neutral place to stand.
Okay, let's unpack that central thesis.
Yeah.
The main idea is that objectivity is not some universal standard of truth. It's a historically contingent concept forged in 17th century Europe.
And when you really let that sink in, that the way we think about truth is only about 350 years old, it really does reframe everything.
So what was so special about the 17th century?
Well, it was a crisis of both intellectual and social order. You have the Protestant Reformation, which had completely splintered the authority of the church, so that single source of truth was gone.
And then you had thinkers like Montaigne, who were promoting this really deep skepticism.
Deep skepticism. The idea that human reason was basically unreliable and just led to endless and often violent arguments.
That sounds absolutely exhausting. I mean, a world where you can't agree on anything fundamental.
It was. The old foundations of truth, you know, tradition, religious authority, logic based on ancient texts, they were suddenly seen as causing the conflict, not solving it.
So they needed something new.
They needed something radical. The goal of this new objectivity project was to create a new form of knowledge, one based on things you could see, things you could measure and calculate, something that could rise above all the subjective belief, the religious passion, the politics.
So it was really a practical project for social stability, built on this idea of shared, undeniable knowledge. But Gaukroger says it wasn't just about the knowledge, it was about the knower.
That's the core of it. It demanded the creation of what he calls the dispassionate, reliable, and morally disciplined scientific self.
So objectivity wasn't just a new method.
He argues it was fundamentally an ethical achievement, a moral one. It required intense self-mastery.
Let's start with the world before this invention, then. Gaukroger shows that the ancient and medieval way of knowing was, well, holistic.
Mm-hmm.
It was completely value-laden.
Right. For someone like Aristotle or the Scholastics, to understand nature was to understand its purpose, its telos.
Telos, that's a key word here. Can you break that down?
Think of it as the ultimate goal or the inherent purpose of a thing. Knowledge wasn't just about how things worked. It was about why they were the way they were. all in relation to some larger moral or divine order.
So the ideal knower wasn't a detached observer.
No, not at all. They were a virtuous sage.
So the truth of the knowledge was tied to the moral character of the person who had it. If you were a good, wise person, your knowledge was seen as trustworthy.
Exactly. The whole point of inquiry was wisdom, appreciating the cosmos, not necessarily prediction and control.
But then, as you said, the 17th century crisis hits.
And the system breaks. If the most virtuous and learned theologians can't agree on the basics of salvation, how could their character guarantee truth about the natural world?
The trust was gone.
Gone. Society desperately needed a kind of knowledge that could bypass personal character and religious belief entirely. And this is where Gaukroger introduces the two sort of competing models that gave birth to our modern idea of objectivity.
Okay, so the first one is from Francis Bacon, his Matter of Fact.
Bacon was a pragmatist. He looked around and saw that if people couldn't agree on the meaning of an event, the why, maybe, just maybe, they could agree on the event itself, the what.
So just describe what happened. Strip it down.
Precisely. Strip observed events down to specific, simple descriptions, free of any theoretical interpretation or, you know, spiritual meaning.
And that simple idea was a genuine innovation.
It was a social technology for creating trust. The credibility of a fact no longer rested on the sage's authority, but on it being witnessed by multiple reliable people.
Like a jury.
That's a great analogy. Imagine a room full of people watching an experiment. They might fight to the death over the theological meaning of gravity, but they can all agree that the apple did, in fact, fall to the floor.
And institutions like the Royal Society basically formalized this. They created social pressure to stick to the facts.
Yes, creating consensus on the smallest possible data points. The norms became diligence, simplicity, humility.
Okay, so that's Bacon. What was the other model?
The other and equally influential model came from René Descartes, his idea of the disembodied mind.
Right. I think, therefore I am.
Exactly. For Descartes, the external world, with all its wars and conflicting information from our senses, was just hopelessly unreliable. So he turned inward.
And found certainty inside his own mind. Through math, through logic.
Through the clarity of mathematics, yes. And this Cartesian dualism, this sharp split between the pure rational mind and the messy deceiving body, is monumental. It's the philosophical justification for the view from nowhere.
The idea that the objective knower can sort of transcend their own body, their own specific place in the world.
And see things as they really are through pure reason.
And we absolutely still live in the shadow of that mind-body split today. You see it everywhere.
Oh, for sure. Anytime we treat mental health as totally separate from physical health, or assume that a purely rational decision can be made without emotion or intuition, that's Descartes.
So this separation was maybe necessary to achieve certainty, but it also created a problem, which brings us back to this mythical dimension you mentioned.
Yes. Gaukroger really emphasizes that becoming objective was seen as an ethical project. It required a kind of self-purification.
But hold on. If the whole point is to create a method that works no matter who the scientist is, doesn't requiring a certain moral character make it less objective? Because it still depends on the individual.
That's a brilliant question. And Gaukroger's answer is that it wasn't about removing the self, but about constructing a disciplined self that was capable of being trusted. So early scientists like Robert Boyle, they actually wrote moral treatises about this. They argued that a scientist had to actively suppress personal passions, ambition, greed, because those were seen as the primary sources of error.
So it was an active, demanding moral discipline. Wow. The character of the knower was still inseparable from the validity of the knowledge, just in a very different way.
And the final piece of the puzzle, the thing that cemented objectivity's authority, was Isaac Newton.
He brought the two models together.
He synthesized them perfectly. He took Bacon's empiricism, the focus on reliable public facts, and combined it with Descartes' mathematical rigor. And with Newton, objectivity moves from just being an ideal to being a full-blown social practice, embedded in peer review, in universities, and all the institutions that make it feel so inevitable to us today.
So let's try to distill some of the big aha moments from Gaukroger. The first key theme has to be just recognizing the historical contingency of objectivity.
Absolutely. It's a powerful tool, purpose-built for 17th century problems. But it's a choice, not a necessity. And reflecting on that doesn't invalidate science. Not at all. It just reveals its specific scope and its history.
Right. And second, this idea of the moral formation of the scientific self, we just talked about it. The knower had to be a certain kind of person humble, diligent to knowledge that society could trust.
And that's so relevant today. Public trust in science often crumbles not because of the data, but because of a perceived lack of character. You know, conflicts of interest, hidden agendas. Gaukroger shows us that trustworthiness was baked into scientific authority from the very beginning.
And the third major theme is what you could call the great divorce, fact versus value.
Yes. Objectivity was achieved by systematically pushing questions of purpose, of value, of the good life out of the scientific picture entirely.
And that act created the modern split we all live with. Science gives us facts and power, but it leaves ethics, art, and meaning in this separate, often seen as inferior realm of subjective values.
And that legacy is one of the defining philosophical and, I would say, cultural challenges of our time.
Gaukroger's work is just so full of these profound ideas. Let's pull out three that really capture the core of his analysis.
Okay. The first one, for me, is that objectivity was about the strenuous and deliberate construction of a disciplined self capable of being trusted. It's not about passively removing bias.
It's an active ethical project of self-mastery. I love that.
The second big idea is that the matter of fact was an invention.
A social technology.
A social technology designed specifically to produce consensus and stop arguments in a fractured world. Its primary purpose wasn't just discovery. It was social and political. It was about creating common ground where there was none.
And the third?
The third points to the tension in the project itself. That the mechanical ideal of objective judgment, while it aims to eliminate human error, also risks eliminating the very human insight and creativity that make new knowledge possible in the first place.
It's a paradox. You rely on human genius to create a system that tries to transcend human limitations.
So, how does knowing all this history actually help us in our daily lives?
Right. What are the real-life applications here?
Well, let's start with critical media consumption. When a news outlet or a think tank claims pure objectivity, Gaukroger gives you the tools to ask a better question.
Which is,
what values are embedded in your selection of what even counts as a fact? A financial report might be objective in that it only presents GDP growth. But by excluding metrics like inequality or environmental impact, it has already made a huge value choice about what matters.
That moves you beyond just accepting or rejecting a claim and toward a much more sophisticated analysis of how it's framed.
Exactly. Another application is understanding scientific authority. Since its authority depends on the perceived moral character of its practitioners, it suggests that rebuilding public trust isn't just about publishing more data.
It's about demonstrating transparency, acknowledging limits, and showing a real commitment to the public good.
Precisely. And finally, there's personal decision making.
We aren't disembodied Cartesian minds.
We are not. We're whole, integrated people. And understanding the limits of pure, detached analysis encourages a more honest approach. It helps us see that for truly good judgment in your own life, you need to integrate that analysis with practical wisdom, with your values, with your emotional intelligence.
So, if there's one big lesson to take away from all this, it's that objectivity is a powerful tool, but it is a tool. It's not the ultimate truth.
It was purpose-built, its power is immense, but we have to recognize its limitations, especially its exclusion of value, when we start asking questions about meaning or purpose.
Where does that leave us then?
It leads us toward what some philosophers call reflexive objectivity. It's about understanding the context and the position of all knowledge claims, including our own, while still striving for rigor. This history helps us avoid, you know, a naive belief that science can answer every human question.
While still respecting what it does so well.
Exactly. It keeps us open to new ways of knowing, which we desperately need for the challenges of the 21st century.
It's a masterful work. It shows that our deepest intellectual values are so much more contingent and honestly so much more creative than we usually imagine. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.